This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Details matter, and at OZ Lifestyle Brands, they're all about the details. Their selection of men's accessories balance style with substance and quality and craftsmanship, showcasing both classic and casual designs. They also make shopping the easiest it's ever been for you while leaving plenty of change in your pocket for your next adventure. I highly recommend them. They've got some really dope wallets, watches, t-shirts, whole bunch of cool stuff there. If you're a man who's looking to style up their game without blowing the bank, I highly recommend OZ Lifestyle Brands. OZ Lifestyle Brands delivers a unique experience to elevate style for men with ultra discerning tastes. OZ is for men who found their calling but don't need to shout about it. So go check out their full range of products at OZLifestyleBrands.com. That is OZLifestyleBrands.com. To get 20% off your entire first order, just use the code ZUBYMUSIC at checkout for 20% off. That's ZUBYMUSIC at checkout for 20% off at OZLifestyleBrands.com. Go check them out.
I am the man, sick with the slang, sick and I'm destined for fame. Do for the fam, not for the gram, stunt me is destined for pain. I do not front, I do not scam, put some respect on my name. Sick like Obane, click and I bang, y'all gon' remember the name.
What's up, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls around the world? I would like to welcome you back to another episode of Real Talk with Zuby. On today's episode, we've got on an awesome young lady who is a socio-political commentator, and she is also a cosplayer as well. So we're going to get into some interesting stuff today. I would like to welcome to the show Mac, aka Kenzie Puff. How are you doing, Mac?
Great. Thanks so much for having me on.
You're very welcome. So I've given a very brief intro to you right there. So why don't you introduce yourself to the audience?
Yeah, sure. So I comment on political stuff mostly on Twitter, but as you said, I'm a cosplayer as well. So every once in a while, there'll be a photo of one of my cosplays and people will be very confused because I'm not what they thought they were getting with my Twitter. So it's kind of a mixed bag. I kind of got into cosplay and politics actually around the same time. Which we can get into later because that was kind of a crazy transition of really researching politics and getting into a culture that really has one-sided politics at the same time, which okay. I'm sure you know.
Well, I don't know a great deal about the politics of the cosplay world, to be honest with you. It's all new to me.
It's kind of how, unfortunately, a lot of culture dominated things go. It's pretty, if you're right of Karl Marx, you're viewed as a crazy person. So
aren't we all? Join the club, Mac. Join the club.
Right.
So tell us a little bit about yourself. So where are you from? Where did you grow up? What's your life been like that's led you to this stage?
Yeah, sure. So I am very Midwestern. I've traveled a little bit. Probably the farthest I've been is Poland, but that was in eighth grade. Otherwise, I just pretty much travel around the Midwest going to these conventions. I grew up in your standard middle-class nuclear family. I only have one brother, and then it's just us and our parents. And we grew up going to private school, which I'm very fortunate for. So that kind of shaped my view in early life, I think, looking back as far as politics and education go and how the government gets involved in that kind of stuff, which is one of my main issues. But pretty standard. I grew up being told, which is hilarious now that there's three things you don't talk about, which is politics, religion, and family feuds. And I talk about politics and religion a lot. And actually, my brother is becoming a pastor. So we just completely ignored my parents, you know, direction with that. But, you know, and actually, I was a world religion major when I was in college, which I ended up not completing. But it was just something that was interesting to me, just researching other religions. We grew up Christian, so Lutheran Christian. So we're Protestant, which I'm sure the Catholics on my Twitter will come at me now when they hear this, but I have a lot of Catholics that follow me, and that's kind of the default people assume that you are when you say you're Christian. So it's always funny to kind of banter back and forth with them.
Maybe where you are in the UK, I don't think that's, I think in the UK, obviously you've got the Church of England, which is Protestant, which is larger, I believe, in the UK, has a bigger presence than the Catholic Church. So actually I think in the UK, it's kind of the opposite.
Well, and that would make sense. I mean, being Lutheran, that was a huge European movement with the Reformation and stuff like that. So it makes sense that that would kind of be backwards there as opposed to the US. But
yeah. So tell me, what is it that got you into talking about politics in a public forum on social media, on YouTube, on Twitter? What was it that you said you discovered, not discovered, but you said you got into politics and you got into cosplay at the same time? Now, to most people listening, that sounds like a weird juxtaposition. Those sound like really, really different things that don't really overlap. So what was the origin story?
Yeah, so I got into politics at all. I would consider myself a centrist. I know a lot of people either come from right wing or left wing, but I was pretty much completely politically apathetic. I thought, you know, oh, all of these people are crazy. So I think I sympathize with people, especially in today's political climate in the US. They're like, all of these people are crazy. What is going on? So I'm like, yes, I totally feel you there. So I grew up being told you don't talk about politics. So sadly, I just thought, oh, it's not important, which now I realize is kind of true, but kind of wrong. But I got involved in college in 2015 with a group called Young Americans for Liberty. And they started out of Students for Ron Paul, who's a pretty big libertarian figurehead. And I wasn't libertarian at that point, and I had no idea what it was or that it was even a thing. I just heard lib and I was like, oh, it's a different kind of liberal, which now triggers me when people say that. But so I got involved with them, and they were really just activism based. So we would just host events on college campuses and try to reach out to students just to get them involved. We didn't necessarily care which side they came from. It was just, we thought it was important to get younger people involved in the conversation. So it was pretty much a neutral standpoint. And then I started going to these conventions that they host in all different regions of the US. And then I kind of got introduced to the Mises Institute, which is pretty staunch libertarian, like they label themselves that, and you get into the philosophy with that. And I attended that last summer now. So it's been a year since I attended that. And that's when I really kind of buckled down and became pretty firm in my beliefs, I'd say, and found my tribe, at least when it comes to politics.
Okay. And what was it that attracted you to that? I don't know much about Mises, so you can educate me a little bit on that.
Yeah. So, I consider myself an anarcho-capitalist, so I
You're going hardcore.
Swing, yeah. But, and people get scared when you say that, but
no, it's funny.
I like to call myself a practical one. So, like, if tomorrow the federal government was like, "Hey, we're just going to do policing and the army, is that cool? You guys can do everything else." I wouldn't be like, "No, all or nothing. Screw you guys." I'd be like, I would say, oh my gosh, that's great. Yeah, let's progress that way and get people to be more freedom based that way. I would, you know, so I'll work with people and I try to meet people where they're at. But the Mises Institute, I think, is obviously heavily influenced by anarcho-capitalism, which to me is self-ownership, property rights, and non-aggression. So those are, that's like my trifecta there that I try to, you know, even if somebody doesn't agree with me completely on politics, if we can agree on those things, at least, I find it a lot easier to talk to people. And even if it's just one of those things that they agree with me with. So,
yeah, no, I mean, that's interesting. I mean, I like to talk to people of all different kinds of perspectives on this podcast, and I have done. So I think one thing that's interesting, I know from my own perspective, is that I've done, like, I don't read much about politics. Like, my political views haven't really been, I don't even want to say, like, sort of shaped by any individual or any reading or being a member of any group. Like, I've never been a part of anything. I've always just kind of, literally since pretty young, I guess my sort of natural mindset and my way of viewing the world has always been kind of like center right position. Mm-hmm. And then all that's kind of happened in terms of the political quadrant is I've just sort of shifted slightly downwards from thinking, okay, the government should do this, this, and this, to thinking the government should do less and less. Like, I wouldn't say I'm as far as a full blown ANCAP, but I can certainly understand it. I think to me, it's kind of like, I think the way I view it is just like you've got a sort of growing trend of people calling themselves socialists or, you know, promoting socialism and whatnot and advocating for government or communal ownership and all that kind of stuff. Just like how I think that, I guess, practically and pragmatically, I mean, full-blown socialism, communism, we already know what the results of that are. And then I think full-blown anarcho-capitalism, I'm not sold on. I can understand both positions from a sort of theoretical standpoint. Whatever the system is, I think if human beings were perfect and everybody was just nice to each other and nobody was aggressive and nobody was violent, whatever system you do, actually, it would work. Even full-blown communism, socialism, would sort of technically work in some way if there was, like, no evil in the world and everybody was kind and everybody treated people like they were their siblings. Then, you know, in a family structure, socialism works fine, right? In a very tight community, socialism can work fine. But on a sort of national level, it devolves very horribly. And I do personally feel that if you were to have, you know, any kind of complete anarchism, you know, even if you have obviously got private individuals and companies and whatnot stepping in to fill in some of these government roles, I'm just not sure that it would, in practice, I'm not quite sure it wouldn't sort of devolve into the same kind of chaos. Cause I think you'd just get certain people and groups who'd form little militias or gangs or whatever the case is. And then they'd sort of start oppressing everybody else, and then you don't have anything in power that can put that in check. So that's what I think. So I'm kind of like, I lean libertarian, but I'm not if you put me next to like a dyed in the wool libertarian, then I'm probably going to sound like they'll probably be accusing me of a socialist, and then a socialist will be accusing me of being like an evil right winger. So I guess I can't win anyway.
A statist, as my libertarian, you know, friends would say. Am I allowed to say libertarian comrades? I feel like that's an oxymoron.
Yeah.
I try to kind of, you know, understand where people are coming from. When I first got involved in all this, there were times I would just kind of screech statist at people. But then you have to realize, well, that's where I was at. Mm. So it's unfair to look at someone and be like, you just don't know what you're talking about. It's like, I had no idea what the hell I was talking about. So, you know, I try to have conversations like this. That's why I've been loving to go on these podcasts so often now within the past year, because you get to hear other people's perspectives instead of just kind of talking at yourself on Twitter.
Yeah, absolutely. So sell us on anarcho-capitalism. Why should I become an ANCAP?
Well, to me, and actually a lot of fellow anarcho-capitalists get kind of miffed at us that are Christian and anarcho-capitalists, because, you know, they say, oh, well, you're Christian, so that's authority, so you can't be ANCAP. And I'm like, guys, there's a difference between political anarchy and moral anarchy. I think most people would agree that moral anarchy is not a good thing. There should be some set, you know, we can disagree on what set, but there should be some set of guidelines at least. that we can go off of. So, but my view on anarcho-capitalism, at least coming from a Christian background, is that it works because people aren't perfect, because people are inherently in competition with people, and they're going to strive to always be better than the other person. So, you know, the minarchist, or, you know, my socialist friends will say, well, then, you know, people are just going to take advantage of each other. And then I point to my local government and I say, remember when they took the 3 yards off of your front yard because of eminent domain? That's them literally taking things away from you. So my position on it is just that it's the most ethical position to have. You know, I'm not going to call anybody that doesn't have it unethical. I totally understand minarchism and where people are coming from, but to me, that's the ultimate goal, is everyone coming from this place of, you know, private property rights, non-aggression, and self-ownership. And to me, anarcho-capitalism is the only way that everybody truly owns themselves and doesn't at some point, for some reason, have a government gun to their head saying, listen, I know you would freely donate to this person on a GoFundMe, but we need your tax dollars because we're totally going to do with it what we say we're going to do with it. So,
yeah. So I guess my question, I guess, I think it's probably a question a lot of people would have, is, I get the whole government gun thing, but what if it's just, you know, a gang with a gun? That's kind of my thought. It's like, I get that. Like, I'm kind of on board with that.
You're like, oh, what if it's another person?
Yeah, exactly. You know, because that you can't have, I think once you're past a certain level of population, this is just kind of observing the world. You know, I think you can have like a small group or tribe in the hundreds, maybe low thousands of people, where, like I said, whatever, whether you had anarchism or you had socialism or even communism, I think it can work on that smaller scale. I think the problem arises on a much bigger level. I mean, you see this in some war-torn states, whether that's in parts of Africa or Asia or South America or the Middle East, where there's that power vacuum. Maybe a dictator has been overthrown or whatever, and there's that power vacuum. And what always happens is you get terrorists, you get guerrilla forces, you get gangs who come in and they become like a worse version of the government. So you've still got somebody in power who's putting guns to people's heads. It's not official. Nobody voted for them, but they've just, you know, used their own power and they've seized that. So I'm not aware. Is there, maybe there's something I'm missing in the ANCAP philosophy? I mean, what are the sort of ideas around that, or how that could realistically be prevented on a practical level?
Yeah, so most of the concerns that people have when it comes to anarcho-capitalism is, you know, security. How would we secure things, and how would we protect our neighborhoods, basically, or even your household? There's actually a really good book called Anarchy in the State, Anarchy, State, and the Law. And it actually talks about how private security forces and stuff would work practically, and how actually court systems and stuff like that would work, which is obviously like the main concerns that people have, is how would justice get served and all that kind of stuff. So that's a really good book. And like anybody that's listening, that's thinking, okay, this is crazy, there's gotta be something here that I'm missing.
Yeah. Can you give us a brief summary, just like a cliff notes?
Yeah. So basically there's thoughts. So everybody knows the concept of police, but as sadly we saw when it came to Andy Ngo, all it takes is the government to say stand down, and there's nothing protecting citizens unless they're protecting themselves, obviously, which sadly in Portland, I would imagine the gun laws are pretty stiff. I'm just going to go on a wild guess there. So, you know, in that case, you would just hire private security that obviously they'd compete with each other. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if your home gets broken into and no one's there to protect you, then besides yourselves, of course, if you wanted to hire additional protection, then companies would compete. So it's all about competition. And, you know, the socialist talking point is, well, we have capitalism now, so it's not working. No, we don't have capitalism. We have a bunch of government regulations in every facet of our lives, including, you know, police forces. I would guess that if my neighborhood suddenly decided to get together a private police force and pay people to police our neighborhoods, the local government would be a little weary of that and think that we were, you know, warlords or something trying to go around taking over neighborhoods or something like that.
Okay. So I get that. But what if those, just like you get bad police officers now who are, you know, obviously supposed to be civil servants, but sometimes they don't always serve and protect in the way that they should. And they go a little bit rogue and whatnot. I mean, what would stop that from still happening? I'm very much like a free market capitalist in most things. With stuff like police and military being sort of two of the obvious ones, those are ones where I'm kind of like, I'm not really sure how this would. I don't know. Maybe I'm too. Actually, I don't think I'm too skeptical of human nature. I think I just know human nature, and I think you know what I mean. I think 99.99% of people are at least decent, at a minimum, decent law-abiding people. It's always like, you know what, if you didn't have criminals, you wouldn't have to worry about all this stuff, period. Right? That's always the thing. So it's always
somebody's
like,
gonna do something.
Yeah, that's the thing, you know, like if you didn't you wouldn't have to worry about the justice system and the police and all that if everyone just followed the law. But it's just like, okay, some people won't. And what if some of those people who don't follow the law become powerful or become the people who are running the private security firms or all that kind of stuff? Like, I just don't know how that would manifest in reality.
Yeah, well, basically my view is it's just the ethical way to run things. So a lot of the criticisms of anarcho-capitalism, or even minarchism, honestly, like, even if you leave out police force and courts and military and stuff like that, you know, if you talk about just, well, what if we just reduce it to the states do what they want and state governments control things? People are like, well, then no one's watching the states. So you can kind of always make that argument. But I find a lot of the arguments or concerns, I should say, they're not really arguments, they're genuine concerns.
Yeah.
They are already what's exactly happening.
Yeah. So, I get that. It's just, I wonder if it would be with some things I'm like, would that be better or worse? Like, on most things I lean towards government probably shouldn't do it.
Yeah.
But then there's a couple of things where I'm like, I don't know if you'd met. Okay. Take a country like the USA. You've got what, 350 million people. And I'm just kind of like, how would that be, you know, maybe this little part of Utah, like I'm kind of think, okay, you know, they could go full socialist and it'll work fine. They could go full anarchist, it'll work fine. But then I kind of think of like, you know, even just a single bigger city like New York or Los Angeles. And I'm kind of like, or London. I'm like, I'm not sure. I mean, maybe it's, I don't know. Are there any, or what would be the closest society or place or country or city to what you think would be kind of ideal, or has that ever existed or not?
I'm not an expert on this, but I actually heard a really interesting, I forget whose podcast it was on, but they were discussing how Hong Kong functions in China. Not necessarily, obviously we know China is very culturally communist. But when it comes to economics, Hong Kong is pretty free market capitalist. I need to research that more, but I think a lot of the things that we see that are anarchy based that people point to for saying anarcho-capitalism wouldn't work are sadly anarcho-communist type things, which is unfortunate. And you know, even libertarian started out as, you know, a quote unquote left ideology. And actually, you know, Rothbard, somebody that's associated with Mises and all those guys, he wanted to take it back to say, no, it can be right wing. So I think the trouble when you talk about anarchy in these societies is most of what people know, and if you ask me, it's because that's how universities and stuff teach things, they're always going to be left biased. But most of what people know about anarchy, or when you think anarchy, you think like Molotovs being thrown in the streets and, you know, crazy stuff. But I think that's because of the huge left influence and culture.
Well, what I understand is that there's a difference between anarchy and anarchism. That's how I've understood. Like, I used to always think that was just the same thing. But then when I saw it sort of defined properly, I realized, okay, these don't necessarily mean the same things with anarchism being a governmental state, well, i.e. a state of not having a government. Yeah, exactly. Whereas anarchy is more like just a synonym for chaos.
Right.
Right. So you could just say, oh, this is anarchy. You know, it's not like, not literally, but it's just a crazy situation where stuff is going nuts. And I always, they sound very similar. So I think people kind of hear anarchism and they just assume anarchy, like crazy Mad Max, everybody just going nuts. Yeah.
And I think that happens with a lot of things. Like I talked about earlier, when I first heard about libertarianism, I was like, oh, it has lib in it. So that means it's leftist. You know, when I tell people, or even now, if I kind of don't call myself libertarian on social media a lot, I've kind of strayed from that a little bit. Like if somebody that I know isn't going to go nuts on me asks, I'll say, yeah, I'm libertarian. But it's so funny. I have a lot. I don't know why. I think it's because I'm not constantly talking about how I hate Trump. I've acquired all these very conservative older people that follow me on Twitter, and everyone,
they're the best. They're the best. Yeah.
Every
They're so
once
passionate.
In a while, they are. Every once in a while, I will tweet something like, democracy is a god that failed, and here come the boomers. Like, I love them. I love them so much, but sometimes, and then they go, well, what? So you want no government? I'm like, did you see the yellow and black on my profile? Like, I'm sorry, was there a miscommunication here? So I'm joking that I need to make like an intro video for my Twitter and pin it to my pinned tweet, like, hi. I am not a conservative, you know, stereotypical Republican.
Everybody thinks I'm a Republican, and I'm not even American. So,
right. Well, yeah, I can't imagine how ridiculous that is. I don't even have that defense. I have to be like, oh, well, shoot, I can't say that. From another country, I just have to try to convince them that I'm not secretly Republican and secretly a Trump supporter. But
that said, though, if I like my values actually align more with the Republican Party than with any UK party, as far as I'm aware, though. So if someone calls me a Republican, I'm like, I guess I would be if I were from there. So
you're like, it's close enough, I guess.
Yeah.
But I feel like there's what the Republican Party stands for and what it is. So that's a whole other thing.
Yeah, that's true.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Benign Images. Benign Images is a storyteller consulting company. Through meaningful dialogue and guidance, they help storytellers of all kinds to tell the stories that they feel they have a need to tell, whether it's through simple editor services, consulting, or helping creatives to set up an effective work habit. Benign Images will work with you to help you become a better storyteller. Start your project with them today by visiting their website, benignimages.com. That is benignimages.com, B-E-N-I-G-N images.com. Go check them out.
So tell us a little bit about cosplay. So that's a whole different world, but I'm curious as to what attracted you to it and how you get involved in it.
Yeah, so I have kind of always had a group of friends that is on the nerdier side, playing like tabletop card games like Magic and Yu-Gi-Oh and that kind of stuff, and video games. Even though I'm not super into them myself, all my friends are super into, you know, World of Warcraft and all that kind of MMO stuff. So I've always been around that kind of crowd. So that included, you know, Japanese anime and that kind of stuff. And for whatever reason, I didn't really get into them at the same time because I wanted to. It just kind of happened that way. Right in 2016, when the election stuff started happening and I started talking about politics, I discovered cosplay, which some people are probably like, what is that? It's just costuming. So most people know about New York Comic Con and that kind of stuff, like comic book stuff, which is still cosplay, but I do kind of the Japanese side of that. And I mostly do anime characters and stuff like that. So I've only been reading and watching that kind of stuff for, you know, probably 3 or 4 years now. And then I got into cosplay in 2016.
Okay. And what was the gateway drug?
So I saw this TV show. And it's weird because I don't watch reality TV. I must have just been, I think it was on the science fiction channel that we have in my area. And it was the show called Heroes of Cosplay. And it was professional cosplayers, which blew my mind. I thought, people make money off of this? What is this? So, which I was getting into libertarianism that time. I'm like, yes, peak capitalism. People can make money off of this. So it just had 4 or 5 female and male cosplayers just going to conventions and showing like how they made their costumes and stuff like that. And I thought, that's cool. I want to do that. I can't sew, so I don't know what the way around that is, but I'm going to find it. Yeah. So we have a local convention that happens in my area every May. And the first time I went in like a generic, like I wasn't really a character. I was just like, I'll just wear like a costume.
Oh, okay.
And then I saw how much fun everybody was having. And I was like, no, I need to like find a character that I like and get that. So that's what I did. And I kind of just, unfortunately, it's really expensive, but yeah. It's so fun. So, you know, a lot of people in the cosplay community, I think the reason why people lean left, it's kind of like why a lot of creative people, I feel, lean creative. Left.
Yeah, creatives in general. I mean, you're talking to a musician here, so yeah, I know the deal.
It's because a lot of people, at least especially with nerdy or stuff like video games and stuff like that, you get picked on and you feel like you don't have a space that you can go. And here's this political ideology that promises a safe space. So why would you not think that that's logical? You know, from my standpoint, it's like, no, you're creative. Like people should be able to do whatever they want and dress up however they want and all this stuff. But I get where they're coming from, to be honest.
But. Yeah. I mean, I don't know how aware you are of this, but you know, one of the big determinants of political ideology is actually just personality traits. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I mean, people who are into stuff like cosplay and music and arts in general tend to be very high in like the openness dimension in terms of the big five. And that is the biggest predictor of whether or not somebody will lean left. So as a result of that, that's why most actors, musicians, singers, I guess even cosplayers, you know, people who are creative, it's kind of like a 80-20, 90-10 split on those things. Sometimes probably even worse than that. Like I'm sure I've been in some rooms where I'm like the only guy who's not, you know, like a full-blown lib. But, you know, it's interesting. I was really interested when I first learned that a couple of years ago because it just made so many more things make sense. Because I had been like, why is this the case? Like, why is everyone of the same alignment, down to the fact that, I mean, in the music world, for example, they almost just assume everybody's liberal. Yeah. Like
talk to you like, yeah. And this, and you'll just look at them like, well, no, dude.
Like if you go to an event, right. Or, you know, I'm just talking to someone like, it's like with a lot of things people say, I can tell they're just like making the assumption like, okay, this guy obviously agrees with me and he's black too. So, you know, obviously he'll agree with me on this thing. Nah. like, no, you know, like, you know, I'm like, no, like, why would you expect 50% of the musicians at a rap festival to be female and 98% of rappers are male? So it doesn't make sense, right? It makes as much sense as trying to make like 50% of primary school teachers or nurses male. Like it's not going to happen unless you horribly discriminate against people.
Yeah, I found that out. It's talking about like going to events. I didn't even really realize. I mean, I was just getting into politics. So I went to my first convention out of my state. It was in Ohio. And it was my first like mid-sized convention. There's probably like 11 or 12,000 people there. And they always have an opening ceremony where they introduce the guests that are going to be there that you can meet and talk to throughout the weekend.
Okay.
And they said something. The convention chair, which is like the head of the convention, said something to the effect of, and if anyone says anything that makes you uncomfortable, let us know and we'll let security know.
Oh, wow.
And I'm sitting there like looking at my friend and my boyfriend next to me. I'm like, we got to go. We're going to say something. It's gonna like, they're just going to hear us having a conversation and just.
It just takes that one snowflake.
Right. It went fine. You know, nothing happened, but that was the first time I really realized how different politically things were. And also, I'm not really sure why, but maybe because the left culture-wise is very in tune with like the LGBTQ, you know, community, but cosplay is very heavily involved. Like there's pride events at every convention that I've been to, not just like this month or this past month in June, but for whatever reason, those communities intersect a lot, which I haven't done really much research on. It's just something that I kind of find kind of strange that how those would be related at all. But
I'd have a theory on that.
Yeah.
Partly relates slightly to the first thing I was saying, but also just the whole like dressing up thing.
Right. Yeah, that's
like
true.
I think gay guys in particular would, compared to straight guys, I don't have data on this, but I would think that they'd be more into dressing up and role playing than the average straight guy is, if you see what I mean. Like that's not really like a, and I mean, I'm sure there'll be straight dudes who do and are into cosplay, but like the whole dressing up thing, it's just not really, I don't know. Like it's, I think it's more, yeah, I just think it's more common in that world. Like, just costume stuff. Doesn't have to be cosplay, but just like dressing up in general.
And I could see that because I know a lot of my straight white male friends, they don't mind that I'm into cosplay, but they don't get it.
No, yeah. That's what I mean. They'll be a bit like,
but okay. Why? Like, I just like wigs. And they're like, oh, okay. And honestly, even my mom, this is hilarious. And actually, this might, I don't want to make any assumptions, but this might be why the LGBTQ whatever community is involved with cosplay too. The first time I was trying to explain to my mom what cosplay was, she's like, where is that? Like, she thought it was a city. And then she went to, well, why do you have all these wigs? And she's like, is this a weird thing? Like, yeah, she thought it was a thing. Like, she thought it was like some weird, like, sexual thing. I'm like, no, I just like wigs. It's not anything weird.
Well,
like that.
It kind of is to some people, isn't it? Like, it blends into that whole like weird anime hentai kind of world. Not yes, for everyone, but there's like an overlap.
There are like 18 plus panels at conventions too.
Yeah.
That, you know, everybody's got to go home, and then there's like, you know, random panels about stuff. So
there's like a part of it. It's like some people who are really into just like, even not cosplay, but like anime and like manga and stuff. Like there's that subsection of it, that subgenre, where it's all like, yeah, it all gets very, very weird.
Yeah.
To say the least.
Unfortunately, the I don't want to say, no, they're weird. I'm just going to say it. They're weird. They're always like the loudest. So like you say, oh, I cosplay. And someone's like, Oh, why? And I'm like, no, not weird. I swear. Not weird. They always assume the worst.
Of course. Thing.
It would be like, if you're like, I'm a musician. And they're like, oh, so you do drugs. And it's like, yeah, no. Yeah. It's like, oh, I cosplay. Oh, so you're into weird, kinky sex stuff. It's like, no, no, I'm not. It's just, I just like wigs. And I have wigs. That's really all it is. I just like, that's my favorite part of it is, I mean, I like the costumes, but I like wigs.
So when you see the dude in the tentacle costume, you run.
Yeah, no. So do you know about furries?
I do. Yes. I've met a few.
Yeah. I'm terrified of them. I have like, I have this, I should probably not announce this on a bigger podcast, but because now if I go to a convention, they're going to come for me, but just because it's funny, but I don't know. I never minded as a kid, like going to like theme parks with people dressed up, but for whatever reason, those fursuits freak me out. I don't know if it's because I can't see who's in them.
Yeah.
And I know some scary things about like, obviously they have a subset of really weird people in their subculture. So it's like a subculture or whatever. Mm. I just don't like it. And so I just kind of avoid them politely at conventions. And it's really sad because like sometimes I can tell the person in there wants a picture and I'm just like, no, I'm good.
So like, what do you normally go as? Like who are your favorite characters to dress up as?
There's an ongoing joke, which I broke this year. There's a character from Neon Genesis Evangelion, which is a 90s anime, and her name's Asuka, and she's got red hair and wears a skin tight suit, and it's very uncomfortable, but I love her. She's like one of my favorite characters, and I wore her to every convention except the last one I went to this year. Like over a span of like 2 or 3 years, one day I would wear her as a costume, and people are like, can you just get a different costume? I'm like, I have other ones, I'm wearing them Saturday and Sunday. And people said, we're done. Like, we don't like that character anymore. So
oh, no.
I try to switch it up now. But she's one of my favorites. I also, let's see, I'm trying to think. I have a Poison Ivy costume that I haven't worn yet, which from the comics, like the DC comics. And then Merida from Brave, like the Disney movie, is one of my favorites. Just because her wig is awesome.
So you stick with the redheads.
Yeah, I cosplay a lot of redheads. I don't know. I don't know why. Just that aesthetic, I like it.
Oh, that's fair enough. And so, how have your you alluded to earlier that your politics kind of clash with that cosplay world? Has that had any sort of, have you received any kind of flack or negativity for that, or do you just kind of keep it quiet? I guess you don't want to go to a cosplay thing and talk politics anyway. So, but how's that?
Yeah, I try not to. And honestly, the only reason politics gets brought up at a convention is if it's leftist politics. Mm-mm. So it's like, I don't want to bring it up. I want everybody to enjoy themselves. And I don't want to be that. There's like all those memes about drunk people talking about politics at parties, like three drinks in, oh, we're taking the country back or whatever. I don't want to be that. I don't want to be that person who like raises my hand at a panel and is like, actually, you're wrong about that. That's just insufferable. Everybody's just trying to enjoy themselves. So far I've been really lucky, I think, but I'm not sure if it's luck or the fact that I never thought my Twitter would get anywhere near the reach that it has right now. So actually I have business cards that I hand out at conventions and my Twitter isn't on there.
Oh, it's not.
And it's not even because I talk politics there. It just, at the time that I started cosplaying, I didn't even have 1,000 followers. So I just thought, oh, well, I don't have a big reach there, so I'm not going to promote it. I'll just promote my Instagram and my Facebook page. Mm-hmm. And I just left it off because now I talk about politics all the time. So now I'm not really sure it's a good idea. Yeah. But I have friends that are definitely super leftist. And my test for that is I add them on my personal Facebook. And if they can handle me and not delete me in about 3 days, then they're probably not going to try to come at me at a convention. But for the most part, luckily, I've avoided craziness when it comes to people like coming at you at conventions and stuff. But
that's good because they got like swords and guns and all sorts there too.
Well,
it's not where you want to get mobbed, man. You'll have people shooting.
Stupid. Ever since all these, you know, we have these shootings. Hmm. People like, so I wanted to cosplay this character Samus from Metroid, and she has this phaser gun. It's so fake looking.
Yeah.
It's clearly not a real weapon. No one, even somebody that doesn't know about guns would know, oh, that's clearly like, it looks like a Star Trek something. It's not real. I couldn't bring it. I was going to cosplay her at the convention this year, and you have to email them and send them a picture so they can approve it so you can bring it. And they said, no, unless you put a giant orange dot on your prop, you can't bring it in. And I said, well, that's ugly. I can't cover that in photo shoots. I'm not going to paint it like that. And they said, well, then you can't bring it because it might scare people or alarm them.
Gosh. So is that kind of like a general rule now that you can't bring?
Yeah. They're really cracking down on, I mean, if it's like a giant sword, they're fine with it, but you still have to have at most conventions, like a big ugly zip tie on it. And they try to make it so you can cover it up. So they say, but you know, security at conventions has been really tightened recently. And they make you, actually, the past 2 years, my local convention, they make you do bag searches every time you come in and out of the convention. Mm. And it never used to be like that. You used to just be able to walk in with your giant, you know, keyblade or whatever the heck you're carrying that's a prop. And they didn't care. But now they have to check it in, you know, write your name down, tag it, whatever. It's, in my opinion, it's kind of ridiculous. But obviously, you know.
Yeah, it's stuff like that is always difficult for me because it's like, on one hand, it's like, this is so unnecessary and annoying and restricting. On the other hand, it's like, I completely get it.
It's like they're crazies.
yeah. You know, it's not like something like that has never happened. But, you know, it's like how many shootings in a year do you get? You know what I mean? It's so, and you never know. I mean, wasn't there that one? I mean, there was one at like a video game tournament. Was it last year or the year before?
Oh yeah, I think it was a Madden tournament. I think it was in Florida.
Yeah, and I think and one of the players got killed, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so stuff like that does happen. That's the sad thing. So wherever people are going, it could be a church, a convention, a nightclub, whatever. It's like, it's always that balance between, you know, even every time I fly, every time I go to an airport and you're going through the whole security and like I travel quite a lot, and you know, you can't have your liquids, and you got to put a thing in a little bag. And I mean, I've been flying since I was a little kid, so I remember when people used to smoke on planes, right? I don't know if you ever experienced that. Like, it's probably
I think I was, when 9/11 happened, I was in first grade. So like,
oh, wow.
I've never flown on a plane where I don't have to take my shoes off before
I get on. Yeah, like it used to be literally when you checked in at the desk, they used to be like smoking or non-smoking, right? You used to be able to smoke on, like people used to smoke on planes. So they just have the curtains. And then like, if you went to the bathroom, sometimes you'd have to walk through the smoking section. So you just kind of go through the curtain and like, you're just seeing like, there's just like smoke everywhere and like the smell, and you're just like, and that sounds so crazy now that you could like smoke on a plane.
Well, my parents tell me, we used to just, this was in the '80s of course, but they're like, we used to just hang out at the airport. Like there were arcades and stuff and we just go hang out at the airport.
Yeah.
And it was cool. You didn't have to go through security or anything. You could wait for whoever's flying in that you're picking up. But now, you know, you got to go through security if you want to meet them all the way at the gate. And you just kind of have to wait in this designated area where everybody's been checked out. But
It's a shame. You know, I think that's one of the saddest things in societies, because like a very small handful of people kind of mess things up for everybody else. And then everyone else for the rest of eternity now has to kind of pay the penance for the one idiot who decided to go and, you know, hurt people in some place. And now you've got to take all these precautions. And, you know, as you say, it's affecting a cosplay convention where you can't take a little toy gun that you've made. And, you know, I don't know what the right balance is. I really don't. But so what are you kind of focusing and working on now? Are you particularly trying to grow your social media following, or what are your goals? I know you've got a YouTube channel, you're on Instagram, you're on Twitter, you're on Facebook, but like, is there like a particular thing you're trying to do? Like, I want to get this message out here, or I want to grow this following, or, you know, where do you see the future going for you?
Yeah. So I didn't have a following on Twitter, but now that I do, I might as well use it. So, what I'd like to do is, I know, honestly, a lot of people that interact with me on Twitter are surprisingly cool with the weird costumes that they don't really care about floating in between these political takes. So I would ideally like to start traveling more to conventions, just, you know, all over, not just in the Midwest. I would like to get out to the East and West Coast and stuff like that, because that's where the bigger ones are, really. And I'd like to start doing panels just on random stuff and just trying to like reach out to people that way. Not necessarily like shoving politics down their throats, but like maybe have a panel on like how creativity or like how to run your business and stuff like that at cosplay conventions. Because I think people in general learn better if you're not, you know, shoving your beliefs down their throat, but you're framing it in a way that they can understand. Mm-hmm. And I know there's pretty big debate in the cosplay community right now. There's kind of a clash between people that do it for fun and people that do it as a business, and there's kind of a fight between them right now. And like, well, that's not fair because you're taking away views. They think you're taking away views from other people. Okay. It's not how that works. It's kind of like the whole wealth thing. Well, if you have more money, I have less. Like, that's not how that works.
Yeah. So, sorry to interrupt. I mean, the people who do it as a business, what's their model there? How do you become a, is it Patreon stuff, or is it, how does it work?
There's a lot of Patreon stuff. Crowdfunding type stuff, but also a lot of people sell prints and pictures of themselves. Like, they have professional photos taken. So they'll like work for a company that's going to an anime convention at a booth and sell their prints and also kind of promote for the company. Or recently there's a lot of people branching out into other things, like making their own cosplay fabrics and selling it in stores and stuff like that. Hmm. So, and actually their own props too. Like, they'll just start a prop making business too and sell it to people. Because a lot of people that cosplay, I mean, even me, I kind of thrift what I can, but I don't sew like any of my own costumes. I commission most of my stuff from other artists. Okay. So there's a huge market for that too. So a lot of professional cosplayers kind of reach out into all those little areas.
Okay, that's interesting. That's interesting because it's one of those worlds like I know a little bit about, but
yeah,
I've never. I even like to see the costumes. Like, I like to, if there's like, I haven't been to a convention myself, but if I see that there's been one, like, I will sometimes, you know, look through the photos and be like, oh, that's a dope costume. You know, that's cool. Like, the coolest ones I remember seeing were some of the Transformer ones, which actually transformed.
Oh yeah,
we had like guys like Bumblebee and Optimus Prime, and like they literally like crouched down. I was like, dude, like that's just dope.
There's people that go really serious into it. I saw this one this past year with the Endgame and Marvel movies coming out, and it was Thanos, and this guy was on stilts to like be as tall, like model scale, biggest Thanos was. And his daughter was like the little baby Gamora from the movie. He was like holding her hand, and he looks so big compared to her because he's on stilts in the costume with like, you know, makeup on and everything like that. So people get really into it, and it's really cool. And it really is kind of an art thing. Mm. So I wish it wouldn't get so political, because I feel like everybody likes to enjoy it no matter what side you're on.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we live in a weird time where everything is politicized. Sometimes I feel like it's a good thing, and then sometimes I'm like, no. I think it's good that people are more aware and involved, and I'm a big fan of discussion, so I think it's good people are talking about it and having these conversations and stuff like that. And you've got YouTubers popping up, and you've got podcasts popping up, and people getting really active on Twitter and stuff like that. But then with some things, I'm kind of like, does this have to be? Not everything needs to be political, like, you know, whether it's music or sports or cosplay, like you're saying, or video games. When they start heavily politicizing everything, I'm kind of like, oh gosh, like just give me my video game, give me my ice cream, don't tell me who to vote for, like I just want the ice cream,
right? You know, like,
I don't need my ice cream virtue signaling to me,
just add Ben like, and Jerry's.
Yeah exactly. I'm like, look, just
ice cream. Yeah, and that's why, you know, I kind of go back and forth. I almost just want to take it from a standpoint of I'll go to conventions and like just like the best way to change someone's mind is just be friends with them, which is why I hate this idea that you can't be friends with people that you disagree with politically. Because on some level, I get it. There's people out there straight up threatening people's lives.
Yeah.
That I get. I can understand. But, you know, the maid of honor of my wedding is a feminist. Like, we don't agree on everything. That's fine. Yeah. We can have discussions about things, and, you know, she's changed my mind on some things. I've changed her mind on some things. That's how it's supposed to work. That's how people are supposed to interact with each other. You're not just supposed to be screaming at each other like, no, you're wrong. That doesn't do anything. Doesn't do anything.
you'll get her out of that stage. Don't worry.
Yeah. Well, she's already, you know, she's moving my way a little bit.
Yeah. It tends to happen. Like need exposure.
Especially in modern day, a lot of people that just, they have their views, but they stay pretty moderate or centrist, are moving one way or the other because people are screeching them, pick a side. And they're like, okay,
pick a side.
It's like,
you must have come across that meme on Twitter where it's like the most inaccurate meme. It's like this thing where it's basically like making fun of centrists. And it's basically saying like, you can either be a good guy or a Nazi. And I'm like, those are not the two options here. So it's got like the right, and it's got like guys in like KKK hoods or whatever. And I'm like, dude, not like, the whole right, 50% of the population is not like some sort of like ethno supremacist or something. And then it's like, yeah, either you're on the good guys or you're with like the worst of the far right. And you're just like, no.
I tweet about this all the time. But one of the most frustrating things is, I mean, I'm sure you get this, because I'm a woman. So people just look at me and they're like, oh, she's a leftist, which I just laugh at them. But they figure it out eventually. I had a tweet making fun of companies for like promoting Pride Month, like randomly when they don't.
Oh gosh, yeah.
I made a tweet, and so I actually had a lot of people who were obviously they lean left follow me because of that tweet.
Yeah.
And slowly, I just see them reacting to my other posts saying, "Wait a second, wait a minute." I get a lot of people who just kind of look at you and they're like, okay, so this is what you think. And I know you talked about that, like being in a room and someone's like, oh, this dude's a black musician, so he'll agree with me that 50% of, you know, musicians at the festival should be this. It's like, no, just like talk to people first.
Yeah. Well, of course, you know, it's because people will see you and they'll be like, okay, you know, they'll look at the clues, right? You know, like your age, your gender, down to your glasses. They'll be like, yeah, she's a liberal. Right? it's true, right? Yeah. Like people like look at people and it's like, okay, yeah, that and that. They tick those boxes, so okay, they'll be that. Oh, that guy there, okay, he's that and that. So he's probably one of them. So
I kind of went through my phase when it comes to centrist, because I mean that's basically what I was. When I took political quizzes, I didn't really have any, it's not that I didn't have opinions. I just was kind of apathetic about it. So I went through my phase right after I got in where I was like, no, they're just as bad as people that are extreme on right and left because they won't take a position. It's like, you have to understand, most people just go about their lives and they don't care about this kind of stuff. Like, where I was is what most people are. They just want to take care of their families and not be bothered.
Yeah, literally. And
that's why I grew up. I figured out I used to be kind of resentful that I grew up being told to talk about politics, but it's just because that's because most people just generally don't care. They just want to do their thing and live their lives however they want.
What you'll continue finding if you're anything like me as you get older, like especially over the next decade, is you'll mm-hmm. find that like more and more stuff that your parents and older people said to you and loads of traditional ideas, like it starts to make more and more and more sense. You're like, oh, now I get why they said that. Oh, now I get why they did that. Like between the ages of 20 and 30, yeah. I really had that. Like I started being like, man, there's so much stuff like my parents used to say, or, you know, I mean, like I understood most of it, but there would always be some of those things like, well, why is it like that? Or why does society have to do things that way? You know, you go through that period of questioning it all. And then especially now at the current time where it seems like there's no objective reality anymore, or people don't want to have it. And it's like, okay, yeah. I now better understand some of those more traditional sort of values and ideas of just having something that doesn't move too much. And okay, you know, and I think there's this sort of arrogance as well that comes with, I guess, which comes with youth, which is good to a degree because you want to challenge mm-hmm. and question things. But I think you find a lot of people have this idea that just because an idea is old, that it's bad, right? And that it needs to be changed. Yeah. It's like, well, certain traditions and ideas and things in culture sort of, you know, they knew what they were talking about. Like it survived for thousands of years for a reason, not because people just wanted to like oppress people and be mean.
Right. And I kind of went through probably when I first started college and started getting into politics, I kind of went through my questioning phase, like, oh, well, why are these people so traditional? This is dumb. Like, it doesn't matter. Just let everybody do what they want. And then I harp on this all the time, but like your personal preferences really don't have anything to do with libertarianism. And that's why I kind of stray a little bit from calling myself libertarian to people, because then they assume that I'm like, dude, but weed, like, and all these. And I'm like, I don't have a problem with people doing that as long as they're not hurting anybody else, but that's not who I am. So I don't want to be.
I'm very much the same. My social values and moral values and my political values don't really overlap that much.
Yeah.
Like socially and in terms of my own sort of moral stance, like I'm pretty, because I could be considered pretty conservative, and I don't know. It depends on what you compare me to. Like compared to an older generation, I'm probably pretty liberal. Compared to like people my age and younger, like I probably seem very conservative. But it just kind of depends on the thing. But ultimately, I'm like, well, I have no desire to impose that on other people. So for that reason, I lean more libertarian politically, because I'm like, this is what I think, this is what I believe, but I'm not trying to like force that on anybody else.
Right. That's why I kind of laugh so hard whenever I talk about anything like remotely traditional, like, because I get libertarians coming at me saying, well, then you're not libertarian. It's like, did I say government should enforce that? No, I just said I want to homeschool kids when I have them. I didn't say I want the government to come rampaging through your house and make you stay at home with your children. I just said, I think that's probably a good idea given what's happening in society. And, you know, I just, libertarians, I feel like we're pulled different ways so much that I feel like why people feel like they have to do that is because if they don't, then they're going to get attacked by the left or right. Yeah. And we just need to do our own thing and not worry about what the right or the left is going to say, because you're just going to go insane. Because I went through that moment where you're like super black-pilled. You're like, all these people aren't listening to what I'm saying, and they're just going to believe what they want anyway. It's like, then you start talking to real people, and you find out not everybody's crazy. So it's just the loudest people are crazy. So
yeah, and they're all on Twitter.
Yes. Especially since Tumblr kind of got shut down. Oh, we kind of got invaded by Tumblrinas, and they're everywhere.
Yeah.
It's disturbing. And they all have blue check marks somehow, even though they only have like 2,000 followers. I'm like, what's going on, guys? I'm so confused.
Tinfoil hat.
Yep.
Yeah. Awesome, Mac. I'm just looking at the time. We're coming up to an hour now. So why don't you let people know where they can find you online, where they can follow you?
Yeah, sure. So you can find me on Instagram and Twitter at underscore Kenzie Puff, KenziePuff. And then if you're interested in my cosplay, I have a Facebook page called Kenzie Puff Cosplay. And that's two words. And my YouTube and my political Facebook page, I like to keep them separate for people that don't want to be too weirded out by cosplay. It's just Mac, M-A-C-K, and Liberty, and that's three separate words. So you guys can find me there, and hopefully I'll be posting a lot more on my YouTube in the coming months too, since it's summer now.
Awesome. Mac, thank you so much for coming on the Real Talk with Zuby podcast. It's been a pleasure getting to know you.
Yeah, thanks so much. You too.
Awesome. Talk soon. Bye-bye.
Real Talk with Zuby is sponsored by Gumroad.com. Gumroad is a platform that makes it really, really easy for creators of all kinds to sell their products, both digital and physical. It's what I've been using for my latest book, Strong Advice, Zuby's Guide to Fitness for Everybody. Gumroad makes it really quick, seamless, intuitive, and easy to sell whatever it is that you want. You can get started in just a few minutes by going to gumroad.com, signing up as a creator, and setting up your product. Did I mention that it's free to use? It makes it really quick and easy for you to set up and sell your products and get paid every single week. And it also makes it really easy for buyers to pay you with credit card, debit card, PayPal, various payment methods. It works well on mobile as well as on desktop. So I highly recommend you go check them out, whether you are an artist, a podcaster, a creator, a musician, whatever it is that you do, check out gumroad.com. That is GUMROAD.com and get started today. Gumroad.com.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.